Okay, I'm back. This is Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. And I'm very excited about part two of this program. I am going to bring on my guest, Jasmine Leva. And she's just Jazz to her friends. And maybe she'll let me call her Jazz. She's unapologetically an artist, born in D.C., a city that used to be more appreciative of doctors, lawyers, and politicians. She moved to Los Angeles for college to pursue her dream while completely dismissing America's. After 3 years of itching to do, and despite uninvited judgments, she left school a year shy of her degree for a TV production job. She is debt-free. That's nice. From there, she went on to work as an associate producer on a NAACP-winning docuseries entitled Unsung, and shortly after was given the opportunity to write and produce on Being, a docuseries highlighting dynamic entertainers in film and music. Happy to be doing what she loved, but simultaneously unhappy about putting that passion into someone else's vision, she decided to let go of her 9-to-5 and come into her own reign of pure artistry. Just Jasmine, no limits and no boss, except for her own creativity. She went on to star in commercials and print ads for major brands like Nissan, Sony, Apple, Uber, American Express, Diesel, Black People, Meat, Credit, Sesame, Michelle Watches, Elle Magazine, and more. She also starred in the Lifetime show My Crazy Ex and is scheduled to star in her first indie film in 2017. However, she did not lay her behind-the-camera talents to rest. Jasmine and her fiancé, Kenny Leva, are currently producing their own feature-length documentary, The Invisible Vegan, a film that chronicles Jasmine's personal experience with plant-based eating. The film also explains how plant-based eating is directly linked to African roots and how African-American eating habits have been debased by a chain of oppression stemming from slavery, economics, and modern agribusiness. Not to sound pedestrian, but the sky's the limit and her evolution will be televised. I love this story and I can't wait to talk to you, Jasmine Leva. Hi.
Hello, how are you? And just so you know, you can call me Jazz.
Oh, thank you, Jazz. I didn't want to, you know, jump to that, but I like the name Jazz, not just because I love jazz music. And I love Jasmine tea and all things jazzy.
I love Jasmine tea and jazz music too. Like Ella Fitzgerald, that's my girl.
Oh, yes. I love her. Yeah. And I actually got to see her once in San Francisco a long time ago. She was awesome.
Are you serious? I'm jealous. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm not young. So I was young when I saw her. Okay. But, you know, she's still good in the videos and on records. It's all there. She's still huge in terms of her character and voice and interpretation.
Yes.
And nobody else. Yeah, nobody else is quite like her. Oh, okay. Well, maybe.
I agree.
Now we'll talk about you and the Invisible Vegan. So let's talk about what is the Invisible Vegan.
So, The Invisible Vegan, it's a documentary about plant-based eating in marginalized communities, and it focuses on Black communities, and it uses my narrative as a foundation. And I was motivated to do this project, one, because, you know, I've been flirting with, well, now I'm a vegan, but before I flirted with it for the better part of a decade. And a lot of my friends who, you know, were people of color, they would, you know, they would laugh at it. They didn't understand my choice. And I was just wondering, like, why is it that they don't get it the way that I get it? And so when I was looking at a lot of the vegan documentaries on the market and just reading up on veganism, it clicked to me, you know, wait, a lot of this material isn't necessarily formatted for, you know, people of different races and people from different economic backgrounds. So I wanted to do a documentary that kind of filled that void so people that I love can also get information that might, you know, save their lives.
Well, I told you when I saw the trailer how much I thought this information was needed, and I really believe that, and I think it's important on a number of levels. I don't know if we'll get to all of them, but we'll touch on a few. So I really thank you for this, and it's courageous and exciting and scary probably to do this, and expensive.
It is very expensive. I'm actually I'm running a crowdfunding campaign right now. We just launched it about 5 days ago. We're about 15,000 in. The goal is 50,000. We're 15,000 in. We've just been given a $25 matching grant offer. So it looks like, you know, 10,000 more, and
great.
We got the money we need.
Fantastic. Congratulations. And I'm sure you'll reach
Thank
it.
You.
And like I said, it's such an important message. Why did you call it the invisible vegan? Did you feel invisible?
I called it the invisible vegan. It's this, it's a novel by Ralph Ellison called The Invisible Man. Great novel. And in his intro, you know, he's saying how he feels not only, you know, invisible and when he's in white spaces, but also because fit into a certain stereotype, he feels invisible in black spaces as well. So I kind of identified with that feeling. So that's one reason I chose it. And then just for, I guess, a more visual reason, when you think about the vegan movement, well, now it's a little bit more colorful and diverse. But before, you know, when you think about an animal rights activist, when you think about people that care about the environment, people at the forefront of the health movement, you don't see a lot of black in those spaces. And sometimes the black people that I see in those spaces, I feel like they don't represent, you know, the kind of women I grew up with. Like, you don't see the, you know, like the cool guy that listens to hip hop. You don't see the, you know, the cool chick with her cornrows and her tight jeans and her hair weave, you know, kind of repping animal rights. But these types of women exist. And even though they might not be mainstream, these are the type of women that, you know, some little girls in the inner city might identify with. So they deserve visibility, too. It shouldn't just be this, you know, like one type of black person that's put in the forefront, which is usually someone that, you know, has this kind of non-threatening look instead of not non-threatening, that's the wrong word, but someone perceived as non-threatening to the dominant class, instead of just having like a lot of diverse blacks in this movement to relate to different people in our community.
We've got a lot of problems in our culture, no question about it, and I'd like to think that we're moving forward. It's a little challenging right now with this crazy federal government that we have, because it seems like everything's going backwards quickly. But let's put that aside and focus on all the good that's going on. This movement definitely has been promoted or brought into the mainstream by white male doctors. There's been a lot of work that's done on the ground by a very diverse group of people, but the ones who have gotten the most attention are white and male, you know, and a lot of the great women activists of any color, you know, don't seem to get the notoriety that these white doctors are getting. But, you know, okay, I accept it. That's just the way things roll.
I appreciate you, and that's something I, like what you just said, I appreciate it. Like, I appreciate, you know, you just owning up to that instead of, you know, what a lot of people try to do. You know, they make it seem like racial inequality is something that's just in black people's heads. Like, it's just something that we're manifesting that doesn't exist. So for you say, like, no, you know, people in your culture, they do a lot for the movement. They're just not shown. Thank you for recognizing that.
You're welcome. Well, I can honestly say I don't know what it's like to be in your skin. But
thank you.
I want to say that I try and empathize, you know, and it's not a pretty world that we live in. I know that. And it's not a fair world. And, you know, I do whatever I can. Now, so one of my favorite people on the planet happens to be a medical doctor, Dr. Milton Mills.
Oh.
And he's in your trailer, and I assume he'll be in your film.
Yes.
And I've known him a long time, and I just love this man. He's just so good. And when I was pondering your title, I thought about Dr. Milton Mills because I've interviewed him on this show recently this year and then 5 years ago. And when I talked about this like last week or the week before, when the documentary What the Health came out, that Dr. Milton mm-hmm. Mills is in, my interview with him from 5 years ago is getting like tons of hits. And mm-hmm. I realized it was because nobody else has anything out there on Dr. Milton Mills. You know, there are some other white doctors in the film, and I'm sure other people are searching for them too, but there are plenty of other websites that have stuff on them. And so I'm not feeling that traffic as much. But mm-hmm. I'm like the only one who has Dr. Milton Mills out there because he's fantastic. But I felt like he's invisible. And now he's becoming exactly. a little more visible.
Right. And what's awesome about Dr. Milton Mills is he really knows his stuff. Like if you're talking about plant-based eating, he can give you the environmental reasons behind it, the health reasons behind it, the animal rights reasons behind it, aside from just the medical part of it. So he's a one-stop shop. He's the real deal, and I was honored to be able to get him for this project.
Yeah, well, he's getting his hands dirty every day.
Mm-hmm.
and doing really phenomenal work. The other thing that people knee-jerk respond to when I'm promoting a plant-based, healthy, vegan diet, wop, 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 is that it's a privilege. It's for privileged people who can afford it, who can go to Whole Foods, Whole Paycheck, whatever. Can you talk about that?
Yes. When the problem is, like, sometimes when you have people who are trying to, like, if you have people in the movement who are trying to get other people to go vegan, you know, you have to address that some people live in food deserts. You have to address that some people are using food stamps. So you need to tell, you know, there needs to be specific instructions for people who don't have the means to go to Whole Foods, who can't go to Sprouts, who can't get these, like, fancy alternatives that, you know, help people bridge their way into a vegan diet. Like, you need to make this palatable for them, because everyone does not have the same amount of access to, like, fresh, healthy foods. And even making that, you know, a bigger issue kind of on our national agenda, there are certain things that should be equal, and there are certain things that, you know, the amount of money you make should dictate, you know, your access to certain items. Like, if you make a lot of money, okay, yeah, you can buy your name brand shoes and you can buy your expensive dresses, but every child, I think, deserves a fair opportunity. Every child and adult alike deserves fair opportunity to, like, fresh, healthy, organic food that hasn't been, you know, pumped with antibiotics, who, you know, like, just fresh fruits and vegetables for everyone. Like, that should be, like, a basic human right.
Yes. And I hope one day our civilization gets there. But we are not born equal, as much as we like to say we are. Every child is entitled to clean air, clean water, abundant healthy food, an excellent education, and the opportunity to be whatever it is that their soul wants them to be. And we've got a long mm-hmm. way to go before that happens.
Right. And
I just want to add that every non-human animal has that right, too.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing about this, like, food is it's a life or death issue. And people don't look at it like it's a life or death issue because, you know, having poor food options, that's not something that will kill you instantly. But that's the difference between, you know, a mother's child living to 100 or, you know, only living to 50 and passing away because of clogged arteries and heart disease or diabetes or cancer. So it's definitely life or death. And if people care about, you know, the life of their children and their own lives, this is something that we need to start, you know, kind of rallying for in our communities.
You know, I mentioned our current government before, and again, I don't want to get too into it, but we are being fed a new story, a story of lies, a story of fantasy, a story of false truths. And in some ways, our culture has been fed lies probably since this country started after demolishing the Native American race. And then from then on. And, you know, we keep trying to see the world through rose-covered colored glasses and not seeing the truth and not seeing the victims through the decades, which we need to if we're ultimately going to rise above and become what we should become. We need to really acknowledge all of the wrongs that we've done and our ancestors have done. But while we're swallowing this story that we're being marketed to and manipulated to, many of us who start to have a little means want to have the benefits. And some of the benefits are eating rich foods and eating animal foods without realizing the story and the history behind it. And I'm sure that many African Americans feel this way too. And that's where your film comes in.
Yes. And it's also countering years of advertisements. Because when you think about it, you know, a lot of the choices we make as Americans, we were conditioned to make those choices. So, you know, if you have been fed meat all your life, it's like, you're attached to meat. You're addicted to it because that's what you were given. That's all you know. And same thing, like you look at these commercials for food. I mean, in my lifetime, I've probably seen a McDonald's commercial, you know, 5 million times. Whereas how many times have I seen, you know, PSAs for going vegan or eating healthy or eating plant-based? So this is, you know, like messages like this. I'm glad they have like all these documentaries coming out because I feel like this is countering that. So we're putting something new into the psyche. Like we're putting, you know, this is Inception. We're planting new seeds. So, you know, hopefully in the future, you know, our kids grow up on different messages than like just these food advertisements.
And what foods do you want to be eating? Do you want to be eating the foods that you think are your culture's foods, which were actually brought upon you from slaveholders that were just giving you the worst thing they possibly could? Or do you want to eat the real foods from your culture, which are healthy and nourishing and were taken away from you?
Yeah. And even when I think of like my culture's food, like as far as, you know, the scraps that we were given on the plantation, you know, I just look at that, you know, that was just an example of our genius. You know, when we had nothing, we were given scraps and we were able to turn it into a delicacy. And that shows how creative we are as a people. But the pig feet and the chitlins, like that doesn't represent, you know, our culinary tradition. Like that's slave culture. And even though slave culture is a part of black culture, it doesn't encompass it. So, you know, when people think about like black culture, I want them to think about African culture. And yes, in Africa, before all this like slave situation happened, you know, we were eating fresh foods. We were growing crops. You know, the way we prepare vegetables, like we brought those traditions over to America. So just knowing that like, you know, we contributed more than pig feet to, you know, the culinary arena in America. So just kind of giving people that sense of pride, like, you know, salads, you know, that's a part of who we are too, you know?
The unfortunate thing is that the sad standard American diet is being exported all over the world, including to Africa and many of the countries there, and with detrimental effects. So a lot of cultures that have eaten some wonderful diversified foods, all kinds of whole grains and roots and plants, are more and more not.
And I think in a lot of people, they don't know, they don't understand the power of their choices. You know, when they eat a piece of bacon, you know, they don't think that, hey, you know, the commercial farms that produce this bacon are put in African American communities, and it makes their property value go down. And because of a lot of, you know, the manure and the chemicals get in their water, and then they end up getting sick. Like, we don't realize the system of environmental racism that we're participating in when we eat these kinds of foods. So I also think if more people kind of knew the ramifications that come behind what they put in their mouths, you would have a lot more people who would make conscious choices. I mean, don't get me wrong. You have a lot of people who would just say, I don't care, eat their bacon, egg, and cheese anyway. But, you know, it, again, like, it all starts with just the message out there and just keep pushing it. And not forcing it on people, but putting it out there, just educating people so, you know, they can make choices out of knowledge instead of just eating out of ignorance.
So important on so many levels. And, I mean, it really is so unfortunate, but we have maybe one of the good things from the current federal government administration is that we've learned how really racist our country is. And I thought it was getting better. But now we know that many people have been harboring so much. And I'm so ashamed.
No, don't, no, don't be ashamed. Like, you have me on this show. So you should be happy. And like I said, you acknowledging it, that's what it's about. I don't know why there's this disconnect and a lot of people don't want to own up to white privilege. Like, for example, I'm attractive. A lot of the opportunities I get, even though I'm qualified for them, I get a lot of opportunities just because of the fact I'm attractive, like attractive privilege. And I would have no problem with owning up to that. So when it comes to white privilege, I don't understand why people just, you know, they can't say like, yo, it's messed up. It's not my fault, but white privilege definitely exists. Like, there are going to be a lot more people, like, if you're African American, you know, you're going to run into more races that don't want to give you a job and don't want to give you an opportunity than a white person. And that's just reality.
And we must resist and educate.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
so
don't
tell
try
me
to sweep it under the rug and just, like, you exactly what you're doing, just owning up to it.
Okay, let's lighten it up a little bit and talk about some delicious food. Can we do that?
All right, let's do it. Yes, we can.
Okay, so you're in
I don't want you
LA.
Crying over there.
You don't want to what?
I said, you said you were crying. I said, I don't want you crying over there. So yeah, let's lighten it up.
I wear all my emotions on my sleeves. I don't hold it in. It's just like I press a button and I pour. it's the only way I can stay sane. So, tell me about eating in Los Angeles. Where are your favorite places? What do you like?
Ooh. Okay, so in Los Angeles, being a vegan, again, if you have a certain amount of means, it's really easy. They have vegan spots everywhere. I stay in the Valley. They have, what do I like over in the Valley? They have this spot, Lemonade. It's not fully vegan, but they have a lot of great vegan options. Mencino Farms, they have this kind of vegan barbecue sandwich that is for the gods. Alok is great. Cafe Gratitude is a favorite. Sage is delicious. Like, they have so many, like, vegan versions of whatever you want. Like, if you want a Peruvian vegan spot, they got it. They used to have this, I think they shut it down, Turban, Cowboys and Turbans, a vegan, Indian, and Mexican fusion restaurant. Like, just any vegan combination you want. Like, it's in Los Angeles.
And do you cook?
I dabble.
Could you do that again? That was a great sound.
I'm not gonna lie. I am definitely not going for Michelin stars in my kitchen by any means. And I could put together something that tastes decent, but I'm not, like, I eat more so for nourishment. Like, this morning, I had, you know, I just did like a breakfast smoothie with like celery and lettuce and apples and acai and some lemon juice. Like, I'm out here, like, for breakfast. Okay, what can I eat that's going to give me energy, that's going to get my skin right, that's going to balance my pH levels? Like, I'm more so worried about that than, you know, let me put together this, like, restaurant meal. And then me being a woman, too. You know, when you're a woman, you got so much going on in your stomach. When you start throwing in too many ingredients, it's like chemical reactions start happening. And I'm just like, no, I just want to keep it simple. Let me just eat this sweet potato and some sauteed kale for lunch and just call it a day and be the better for it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Mixing it up sometimes to so many of us can just, no matter what it is, it's too complicated. Keeping it simple, I love it.
Yeah, just keep it simple. For breakfast, okay. Yeah, just oatmeal with some almond milk. There you go.
There you go. So, Jasmine, how can people help with the Invisible Vegan? Where do they go?
If you would like to, now we're trying to raise licensing funds for a lot of the third-party footage, music, and photos used in the film. So you can go to www.theinvisiblevegan.com, click the donate tab, and it'll take you to our crowdfunder. And if you could donate to this project, help us make it look lovely, that would be amazing.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today, Jazz. And I wish you all the best with The Invisible Vegan. I can't wait to see the full film.
Thank you so much, Karen. It was awesome being on your show.
Thank you. I'm sending you hugs.
And I'm sending you love right back.
Okay, love, love, love. All right, we just have like a minute left. So I just wanted to remind you, because I don't plug this show enough, if you like this show, It's All About Food, I like it, and I know a lot of people do. Can you, like, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, at Responsible Eating and Living, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Pinterest. We have our daily blog, What Vegans Eat, at responsibleeatingandliving.com. The show, It's All About Food, is on iTunes, and it's here at Progressive Radio Network and at my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We archive all those shows with transcripts. So let us know. Let us know if you like us, because, you know, we need to hear that. I know. I need to hear it. Otherwise, follow me and email me. That's what I meant to say, at info@realmeals.org if you have comments and questions. And thank you. Thank you again for listening. I'm Karen Hartglass. This has been another episode of It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.